This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
And usually I would enter in my witty welcome to you guys, but Steve just demanded that he be the one to introduce the show tonight. So without further ado, here is Steve McRae.
Dead people phone home today that we're going to be doing.
Oh, brilliant, Steve. See, I switched it over to Steve to shine for a moment. That's how he does you guys. I apologize, but welcome, guys. You are watching Non Sequitur. I'm Kyle Curtis. That was Steve McRae. Bravo, Steve. I'm proud of you. Yesterday, you did fantastic, and then today, you're just not on the game.
You know, it's going to be a dichotomy, you know.
That's true. Joining us tonight, finally, I was telling him that I have been looking forward to this show before we began. We have Dr. Mark Pitstick. Hello, sir. How are you today?
Awesome. Good evening.
And I will officially introduce you here in just a second. We always do announcements at the top, but I will give you a better introduction than that once we finish with that. Just to let you guys know, coming up as far as shows go, we have David Patney's 6-day discussion on the death penalty. Be abolished. We're hoping on Andrew Rappaport, for the love of God, answers Steve's challenge, because if not, Steve is just going to have an aneurysm. Steve, do you want to map out what you're going to be talking about, whether he shows up or not?
Sure. So on Sunday at 4:00 Eastern, we're going to be going through many of Andrew Rappaport's many claims that he's had over the years that he's denied claiming. And I have challenged him because I wanted to debate him on a numerous amount of issues, including Pleiolian halos, younger creationism, age of the earth, his claim that Dr. Mary Schweitzer was an atheist, his claim that the Oort cloud produced blue giants. Yes, he actually claimed that the Oort cloud was posited by science to explain blue giants. I said that I would debate him on evolution. He said, let's do it. He wants to debate on evolution as a theory. I wanted to debate his claim that evolution is only a theory. But he wants it to be evolution as a theory. I told him, fine, I will figure it out. I have a deductive logical proof that evolution is not a theory using some logic. So I'm going to debate him on that. Now, I've given him everything he's wanted. I gave him the forum. I gave him the moderator. Shannon Q would moderate. Everything I've given him. So he has no excuse to run now. And he's just keep on – he's trying to change it to something else. So if you're on Twitter, go message to Andrew. Steve's, you know, capitulated. He said he will debate you on your topic that he wanted, that he's been bugging me for. And I said, fine. But he's supposed to go on air tonight. And I've already told him I got this show to do. And he thinks that for some reason I said it was going to go on his show. I will go on his show only after he debates me, and I've said that all along. So if he's saying that I should be on a show, he's just outright lying again. So we're going to be pointing out all the lies that he's had over the many years that he's been on the internet. That's what I'm going to be doing.
For the love of my Twitter feed and my notifications, please settle this already, because I get way too many notifications from the spot that you guys are having. Okay, it's so there with just join us on Sunday at 4 for that, whichever way it goes. And then, of course, on Saturday, we've got SJ and Frustrated Atheist at 11. They're going to be debating on communism and atheism. And then At Homies, as always, at 7. So, big weekend. Okay, so joining us tonight to discuss the advances in cell phone, we have Dr. Mark Pitchstick. He is he has a pre-med degree. He's a graduate in theology and pastoral counseling, a master's in clinical psychology, a doctorate in chiropractic health, and you hosted a podcast called Ask the Soul Doctors. I discovered that just today, actually. So quite the resume, I would say. But it's we are glad that you're here, and welcome.
Thank you.
So I guess the best way to start out would be there's a quote that always stuck with me, and it was from Carl Sagan, and he said that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And I don't think that I've heard a more extraordinary claim than the one that Solphone intends to produce results for. So can you kind of introduce everyone to what the concept of Solphone is briefly, because I'm sure we'll come back to it. And then I want to touch on like your personal journey to get to where you started working on Solphone. But just so everybody's kind of aware, what exactly is Solphone?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you used Dr. Sagan's quote, because that's one that Dr. Schwartz uses in a lot of his writings. And he's very aware of that. And that's why he's come up with extraordinary evidence. So a little background about this. I'll be referring to Dr. Schwartz a lot because he's the head guy. I'm the director of the Solphone Foundation. We've been working together a couple years. He asked me to be the kind of the face of the organization because he's a busy research scientist. And his credentials are Cornell University, master's and PhD at Harvard, where he's a professor in psychophysiology, tenured professor at Yale, where he and a handful of people started behavioral medicine. He was director of the first Yale Mind-Body Institute, you know, 450 scientific papers, 11 academic books, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this guy's a scientist. Well, he went to the University of Arizona 20 years ago and started doing research with mediums. He was interested in the question, as are many of us, you know, is there really a life after death, or is that just wishful thinking, an inability to comprehend nothingness? And he found that indeed many mediums were mediocre, some were fake, but there were some superstars. And he's found about 30 so far, and we're talking triple-blind studies replicated by other universities and institutes. Other universities have done EEG studies on these mediums, and they have something like a 90-95% hit rate. This is totally controlled environment where not even the experimenters know who the sitters are. They're in separate rooms. There's no way the mediums could have obtained who the sitters were and obtained information beforehand. He always ran control groups, people like me, for example, who are not a medium, and they're basically guessing, you know, your father's dead, his name is Carl, et cetera. They had a 23% success rate, excuse me, about what you expect from guessing. These mediums, again, had around a 90% hit rate. The chance of that happening randomly are 1 in 1 trillion. Which is off the charts for statistical significance. So again, that was 20 years ago, and he wrote about that in his book, The Afterlife Experiment. Well, once it became clear that these mediums were indeed in communication with, quote, deceased people who really aren't deceased, he then started looking at, is there a way to use technology? Because he's worked with high-tech equipment throughout his career, measuring electromagnetic waves that emanate from the heart and from the brain, for example, and began that 11 years ago with help from some of these mediums. Up to 10 different mediums independently would let him know that people like, and hold on to your seats, listeners, Carl Sagan, Albert Einstein, Thomas Edison, and others, David Bohm, were interested in helping him with this technology. So he would receive bits of information, sometimes just a single word that the medium didn't even know if it was a real word, but it was, and it was exactly what Dr. Schwartz needed at the time to put this together. Excuse me. Dr. Schwartz also over the years has had a team, being at the university, a senior professor there, electrical engineers, optical physicists, software specialists. So he's had top help all along the way with that. So between Dr. Schwartz's knowledge, his earthly team, and then this, what he calls the A team, these quote deceased luminaries, things have come together for what we are calling collectively the soul phone. Now, the soul phone is anticipated to be four different devices. The first one is the soul switch. This is just like a light switch, on or off, or like what computers are based on, zero or one, no or yes. And so this allows then a no or yes answer from what we're calling post-material persons. And we, in doing this work, we had to create some new terms because so much of the language that's existed is wrong, you know, death, afterlife, spirits, and so on. And it's just so archaic and has different meanings to different people. And also, as we go worldwide, we have no idea how those kinds of words will be translated in different languages. So post-material person, people who are no longer living in the material world on Earth, but are nonetheless very real. They have physical nature from the various glimpses we've gotten. He just completed what's called stage two prototype of the soul switch, which means it's working. He is able to identify through a series of questions, what he calls 20 questions, for the personal identification test. Well, let's say he's dealing with Albert Einstein. He would ask, is your first name Albert? He would expect the answer to be yes. Is your last name Jones? You expect the answer to be no. Same questions about birth date, death, physical death date, where he was born, and so on. And so 100% answers correctly on that gives you a good idea of who you're dealing with. The second battery of tests with the soul switch is called knowledge test, in which he would ask a series of little known, very complex questions. So again, for Einstein, was the following formula part of your theory of relativity, yes or no? Now, all this has been computer automated, so the questions and answers can occur while none of the experimenters are even in the building. So this removes questions about experimenter bias. Again, this has been replicated and shown highly statistical significance to be working. Now, that's not very exciting, but the next device is, because as you may know, a keyboard is just an assembly of 43 switches. If you push an L, for example, that's a yes for the L, a no for everything else. So he considers it to be a relatively easy engineering feat once the Type 3 prototype of the soul switch is ready, to then create a soul keyboard, which will allow typing and texting, much like we do now. And he expects that to be by the end of next year. The third anticipated device is called Soul Voice, allowing hearing, like we hear over a phone. You know, we're used now to talking to someone in China. We don't think much of it. Well, it turns out our loved ones who have passed on are likely closer than China, even though most people can't sense them with their five senses. And the fourth device, Soul Video, like we're doing now, Skype, Zoom, FaceTime, seeing and hearing.
So you got, I guess you probably expect that when someone hears that for either the first time or, you know, they're not immersed in it in the side that you are. I'm just a skeptical person. So I come at it from a place that, you know, the show me the evidence point of view. To kind of backtrack a little bit, when you say that the you said the word post-material person, is what you're saying that we exist in a form outside of our bodies, that when we quote unquote die and the body is shed, so to speak, what are we in terms of form, and where do we go?
Well, these are great questions, first of all, and you understand that many indications are that consciousness is non-local. That is, it's not impeded by space and time like our physical bodies are. There's also some good evidence, especially from high-energy quantum physics, people like David Deutsch, PhD, that this energy can manifest in more than one place at a time, and that's borne out by researchers such as Michael Newton, PhD, founder of Life, Between Lives Therapy. So these are not, they're great questions, but they're not simple questions. You also understand, I'm sure, that even though we appear solid to our limited brain receiver and eyes, we're largely made up of a few atoms, and but 99% space, a few electrons whirring around. So I would say that people, post-material persons, people who have dropped their physical body, are just as physical as we are on Earth. You know, it's just that we fall under the illusion that things are, excuse me, solid, the chair in which we're sitting, the table, and so on, when in fact we're not. Well, they're also solid, but they have more of an ability, again, not being inhibited by the filter brain. I had dinner with Eben Alexander a few months ago, and we were talking about that the central nervous system is 95% inhibitory. That is, it filters out extraneous sensory input. That was adaptive when we were cave people to keep us, because we had to survive. We only needed to see what was essential for survival. Well, now we can open that control valve a little bit, thus the benefits of meditation and other centering practices to allow us to see more of the greater reality that has always been there. It's just that most people couldn't sense it. So ask me more.
I was to follow up on that point, and then, like I said, we're going to come back to the different devices, but before we do that, I want to go into kind of your story a little bit, so everybody can get a better understanding of where you're coming from. But when you say that we existed in a form that is outside of our bodies, my question, the question that came to me immediately was the entire allure of this this device, or the idea of this device, is for a way for people to kind of have a communication between people that were close to them in this life and where they went after they died. If we're an energy or a spirit or a soul that, you know, sheds the body and goes on, does that mean that we were here in other forms, like reincarnation, essentially, like we keep coming back in different forms? And if that's the case, how would, do we still have those connections outside, like all the people that have passed on before that had those connections essentially would be the people returning, in a sense? Or is that not how that is? Like, are we always dying and coming back in the body form, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's a lot of questions. First of all, it's useful if we make the distinction. Are we looking at it from human eyes? And that would be the duality model, where you seem separate from me and we're both separate from Steve and so on? Are we looking at it from more of an absolute reality understanding, like people who come back from near-death experiences say, and they say things like, almost universally, we each are one with the one and part of source. We each are interconnected. And as we were talking before the show, that's one reason I have this Indian tapestry behind me, because very good analogies, people like Eben Alexander and Anita Morjani and others say, we each are like a fiber in a exquisitely vast tapestry. And in that sense, we are all interconnected. The Irvin Laszlo perhaps does the best work on this, a systems theorist. And Dr. Schwartz agrees this is very close, that what really, what is most absolutely true, what is going on, the nature of reality is energy and information. And all of the energy and information that ever stored and the myriad ways in which it manifested are stored in what Hindus called thousands of years ago, the Akashic Records, what Dr. Laszlo calls the zero point field. And so this has to do with the quantum void, which is not empty by any means, but full. Buddha talked about this very thing. He said, you want to know what a human incarnation is like? Go down by the ocean and watch the waves crashing against the rocks. The particles of water are part of the one, the ocean. But when they hit a rock for just a moment, they're suspended in the air. That's what a human experience is like. For just that moment, we think we're alone. We think we're separate. We think there's something to fear. And we think maybe that's all there is. You know, we're just a drop of water and someday we perish. Then, boom, we go right back into the one. And I mentioned David Bohm, eminent Princeton physicist and mathematician. And he used very similar terms, the implicate order, which is, or first the explicate order, which is what our senses can see, but that being a very small part of all it is, which he called the implicate order. So he posited that life was most like a seething soup of energy. And once in a while, there's a ripple of excitation on the surface, and that can appear, depending on where the observer is, to be a separate lifetime or some sort of experience. Because let's face it, eternity is a long time. So we as beings of energy, consciousness, spirit, whatever term you like different experiences, like adventures, just like we like different books, shows, and movies now.
So, I just want to, and I'm just trying to clarify so that I make sure that I'm understanding you right. Are we always separate entities, or do we actually, or are you saying we have the choice to come back as a different person if we want to? Like, we can be reincarnated and come back into this physical world. Like, if we're spirits that always existed, right? Are we able to jump back and forth, or do we just come in for a brief period of time and then exit? And what happens on that, you know, exterior world is something completely separate.
Yeah, well, I don't prefer the term reincarnation, even though I trained and was certified by Brian Weiss to do past life regressions. Again, that term is very married to duality. So I was a separate person, you know, I was a Viking, I was a pioneer, and so on. Different people in different times, looking at time as a linear sequential progression. I love the quote by Richard Bach in his book, I think Running for Safety, and he was asked, do you believe in reincarnation? He said, isn't that the belief that we are separate people in separate times, one after the other? He said, that fits a little tight across the shoulders for me. I prefer to look at we are eternal energy that can manifest in various ways at the same time, and it's all happening right now. We have a choice to answer part of your question. We don't have to do anything. In other words, if an energy or soul wants to just stay with the one and hang out, like coming to a place like Earth is too scary or daunting, it can do that. But this is where the opportunities for real growth and service lie, is why some souls choose to come to a place like Earth.
Okay. So let's talk about you and how you came to be a part of this project. Now, from what I understand, you actually dealt with a pretty depressing field of study, I think, the study of death and being in, I believe you used the example from the podcast I listened to, you were in an environment where you're surrounded constantly by children dying, and it was wary on the faith that you had at that particular time. Can you kind of go into that aspect of it and why you chose to kind of, choose this as something to surround yourself with on a daily basis? Like, what was it that you needed to be in this, the field of death? I'll put it that way.
Yeah. or the field of life, to look at the other side of the coin. Well, let's drop back a notch. There's some good evidence from objective multiple sources that I never totally forgot the greater reality, you know, where I came from before I was born. When I was 6 years old, my parents were...
Good man. This is the joy of doing live shows, by the way.
This is why we pay attention to live chat, because they tell us all this stuff, so we have real-time feedback.
The joy of live streaming. Which is fine.
Seems like we're back. We're getting back. We're not quite there yet. We're almost there yet.
All right. Looks like it's connecting back.
Yeah, it's trying.
Dang. Maybe we need Soul Video now. Is it ready?
Can we make a phone call to the dead stream?
Are we good? Okay, we're back. Cool. All right. So there's the joy, ladies and gentlemen, of doing live streams. Sometimes you have unexpected dropouts. It would be appropriate, I think, you know, it would be also on me if I didn't ask as somebody that think, you know, that believes in the spirit world. Is that a sign? Is that a bad omen that since the stream dropped? Is that a bad omen? on the episode, do you see anything around me right now?
I don't have that ability. So getting back to what we were talking about before, then after being around these dying people, you know, I had always been taught God was all loving, all knowing, all caring, and I thought, well, if that's the case, why did this little boy get hit by a truck, or why did this little girl get abused to death by a step parent? And that's why then I went to theology school, clinical psychology, et cetera, trained with everybody I knew. I mentioned Brian Weiss, Raymond Moody, had two different radio shows where I interviewed people like Wayne Dyer and Bernie Siegel and Michael Newton and others, and searched for literally 30 years before I was open to finding out one way or the other. You know, if this is all there is, fine, I just want to know the name of the game we're playing. But to my surprise, found a vast amount of evidence across the board. And then Dr. Schwartz and I were working together a few years ago with a group called Eternia, which was started by John Audette and Evan Alexander, and then hit it off and then started working together a few years ago on this Soul Proof project, and then also wrote the book Greater Reality Living together this year.
So, in your search, one of the things that I wrote down to make sure to ask you, what is the, like you said, we'll take your word, what is the end game in terms of, you know, religion and, as we know it, Christianity, Islam, they paint a world of, you have the material world now, and then once you die, you're off into another, place, whether it be heaven or hell, and your roles at that point are one or the other. You're either going to spend eternity worshiping a creator or being punished for what you did in life. What are you seeing that is the end game once we pass on to the next? What is the purpose?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, those images you described, heaven or hell forever, actually arose in the Dark Ages. And so it's wise to think twice before we stay stuck with concepts that arose in the 14th and 15th century. But interestingly, contemporary views support what the original Aramaic was saying. I've studied three different Aramaic scholars over the years, George Lamsa, Rocco Errico, and Neil Douglas Klotz. And they share that the original Middle Eastern meanings, and Aramaic was a commonly used language. The Bible, for example, was translated into Hebrew, which is mainly a temple language, then into Greek, then German, and to English. Well, every time it crossed the language bridge, things got changed a bit. Middle Eastern terms didn't have just one meaning. They had various meanings. So, for example, heaven and hell meant how you feel when you physically die and you go through a passageway. The Hebrew word for it was mawet, and they described it as a dark tunnel, and there's a sorting out then and a review of what you did. And if you did more good than bad, you feel heavenly. If you did more bad than good, you feel hellish. Now let's go forward a couple thousand of years later with near-death experiences. Dr. Ken Ring, University of Connecticut, worked with more near-death experiences than anybody on the planet. Estimates that there are about 10,000 documented NDEs, meaning while they were clinically dead, their eyes were closed, they were in ICU or ER, they nonetheless perceived events, seeing an object on top of the hospital, seeing a car wreck outside the hospital, details during the resuscitative process. Again, while their brain wasn't working, they weren't breathing, their heart wasn't working, their eyes were closed. After successful resuscitation, these people accurately described these events without any exposure to family and friends from whom they could have learned that. And they were interviewed by university professors, medical doctors, and so on. 10,000 cases like this, some of whom were blind at the time, physically blind, some of whom been blind from birth. So this is very strong evidence that consciousness is active independently of the brain. And Dr. Ring assembled a team of vision experts, and no one could come up with an alternative explanation for this. So now here we have the Aramaic meaning of a word a couple thousand years ago. And what do these near-death experiences come back and say? Part of what I went through was a life review where I saw, not only saw, but felt what I did. And I felt the pain I inflicted on others. And I realized that heaven and hell are primarily not places, but states of consciousness, levels of energy that we can experience here or in the hereafter, depending on our predominant thoughts, words, and deeds.
So who does the sorting in that in those visions? Because you mentioned that when they go through this tunnel, they're being sorted. What or who is doing the sorting?
Yeah, and these are all excellent questions, by the way, Kyle. I'm impressed that you obviously have given this a lot of thought. I appreciate it for your listeners and viewers as well. we use the word soul, but the person who has passed. And usually they are described as having help. Now, Dr. Schwartz and I have adopted the word higher energy assistance. HEA is abbreviation, but higher energy assistance, because some people understandably don't like religious terms, archaic terms. So whether you want to say these are higher energy assistants or angels, guides, master teachers, helping these people along has been well described. And the purpose of the life review, by the way, is not punitive or judgmental. It's all about learning and growth. And so the person who passed is able to pause this recording like you're watching your life on a DVD. You can go back and rewind and look at the good parts. You can kind of fast forward through the bad ones, but that's part of what happens from all the available information.
And you said when you were a small child and you had those kind of abnormal experiences, would you say that you have memories of the time that you existed before you actually were in the material world, or any kind of connection that you can recall from that place?
I don't have conscious memories of, call it life between lives or a dimension before I came into this physical body. What I did have was a real difficulty fitting in. I consciously realized I needed to learn how to be a good earthling. Because even as a little kid, I mean, I like football, I like sports, I played all the sports. But I would, watching a big game, I would think, you know, if they took just a tenth of the time, energy, and money they spent for this move a pigskin down the field to feed poor people, that sort of consciousness would help heal our world. You know, what little kid thinks about things like that? my mom and dad and brother and sister would be watching sitcoms in the TV room with that canned laughter. It just drove me crazy. So I'd go in a different room and read, or I'd just get down the floor and start doing stretches. And years later, I found out those were yoga postures. So when I read the book Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Ludlum, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a perfect phrase for me. And lots of people have this, by the way, people who are more intermediate or advanced souls find out they have to learn how to play the game because they know at varying levels that they are in this world, but they're not solely of this world.
So you are conscious of that. Let's shift now to the meat of the story, I guess. I think that I wanted to paint kind of a picture of where you're coming from for everybody and your kind of life experiences that got you to this place, because I think that's important to lay down first. But as somebody like myself who is, I would consider myself highly skeptical of the idea of concept. Of course, everybody wants something like that to be true. It's so far outside of what I think is possible that it leads me to a bunch of questions about it. And the first question that I have pertains to something that you said earlier in the show, when you mentioned that the dream team, the Albert Einstein, the Nikola Tesla, these you know, icons of science and you know, truth seeking are aiding in the development of this. And one of the examples that you gave was the switch, how it would do the yes, no, whether it be for a name, a letter associated with that name, their, you know, their date of birth, deaths. How is that verifiably Albert Einstein or Nikola Tesla? Like, when you get those results, how do you know that's not just well, how do you get the results? Can you kind of go into a little bit more detail on that? Like, how are you actually getting these responses from these icons?
Yeah, well, again, there are a few questions in there. yeah, it's called the A-Team. And the first way that Dr. Schwartz had an inkling that they were interested in helping and able to help was, again, through 10 of the top mediums. We're talking people like George Anderson, John Edwards, Suzanne Northrup, Suzanne Giesman, who is, by the way, a former commander in the Navy and the top assistant to the Joint Chief of Staff. These are all really credible people. And so individually, they would say, Gary, you know, I'm getting Nikola Tesla coming through to me spontaneously saying, would you please get hold of Dr. Schwartz for me? We understand he's doing some work. We want to help him. And so being the scientist he is, Dr. Schwartz kept all this blind. In other words, he wouldn't share it with the other mediums he would know. So when the same sort of information came in from numerous people independently, that was one clue. Secondly, the evidence that this is really happening is the accuracy of their input. As I mentioned, one time he was stuck on a certain phase of the research, and there's something he couldn't figure out. And one of the mediums said, I don't even know if this is a word, but what is coming through for me is this. It was like capacitance, impedance, conductance, you know, like three words like that. Gary said, oh my God, it's exactly what I need to know. And that filled in a piece of the puzzle for him. And this has happened many times. The third way that we know that this very likely is happening, this appears to be happening, is, as I mentioned, them passing the personal identification test and the knowledge test, which have been replicated. But the ultimate answer to that, and by the way, you're the kind of skeptic we like, because you're a skeptic who asks questions. A closed-minded skeptic would say, this is BS. You guys are crazy. I don't believe it. Okay, those kind of people, there's no talking with them. You're a skeptic, what we call open-minded skeptic, and so are we. You have to be that way, especially when dealing with such immense breakthroughs here. So the ultimate way would be to let them explain themselves, to let them divulge their identity themselves. You mentioned earlier that one of the big focuses of this soul phone technology was to allow communication with loved ones who had crossed over. And that's true. But just as large, maybe larger for the impact of our planet, is that these luminaries are willing and able to, once we are able to probably text, to give webinars, to work with teams of scientists, and pass on key information in every area, climate control, healthcare, et cetera, population control, to help us heal our world. By the way, I should mention that Dr. Schwartz founded the Academy for the Advancement of Post-Materialist Sciences. Last year, they have now over 350 scientists, university professors, and physicians from around the world whose working hypothesis is that consciousness is primary, that is not just a byproduct, a temporary byproduct of the brain, and they expect those numbers to swell to 1,000. So there are numerous neuroscientists and other serious scientists and researchers around the world who are open to this possibility. So at this point, we've kind of backed off. I mean, we talk about the A-team, Dr. Schwartz's wife, Rhonda, who's one of the research mediums, wrote a book called Love Eternal. She talks about it. We talk about some in the Greater Reality Living book and the websites, soulphone.org and greaterrealityliving.com. But for the most part, we're not going to talk too much about the A-team because you're right, it's mind-blowing, and ultimately we cannot 100% prove. We're going to wait till we can let them explain themselves and introduce themselves.
Okay, so let's get into the actual pieces of technology that you're bringing, because this is what everybody wants to know about. So there are, from what I gather, what I've kind of looked at, the progression that you're looking at is going to be something from the soul switch to the soul keyboard, which will enable soul text to soul phone, and then finally arriving at soul video. And I guess your ultimate goal is to package all of this in a soul app, so to speak, so that you can literally do this from a smartphone. Now, walk me through how.
Excuse me. Yeah, let me interject. Sure. First of all, what you said is pretty much true, although it may not unfold in that way. In other words, some of the soul video technology has really taken off. And at one point, Dr. Schwartz thought that we may actually be able to see images of post-material persons before we can even get good yes, no answers. So go ahead.
Okay, so we'll start there then, because that's a big claim. What has led you to believe that that would be possible to, and the question's twofold: how would that be possible, and what will you be looking at? Because when someone goes to, like, if I wanted to speak with my deceased grandfather, let's say, would hope to expect to see my grandfather. Will I be seeing him, or will I be seeing something that represents what he is in the afterlife?
Yeah, it's a great question, a commonly asked one. So let's deal with the second part first. It's commonly reported when people have near-death experiences come back. And again, keep in mind, some of these are documented, so we have extra evidence that indeed their consciousness existed while they're clinically dead and accurately saw. So that lends more credibility to what they report from, quote, the other side. So let's say you did pass on tonight from some, or nearly die, rather, and your grandfather greeted you. Typically, does he look like your grandfather for eternity? No, for God's sake, who would want to look like a 85-year-old guy, whatever, forever? However, he can manifest for a while in that form to reassure you, to comfort you, to allow you to identify who he is. Once you're comfortable with he is much more than his earth suit that you remember, then he can resume form however he likes. in a physical way. It's reported that many people, kind of the set point is when they were 30 years old. That's why people in after-death context report as looking healthy, happy around 30. Or he may materialize or appear to you as energy, multiple lights, colored lights, or in different ways. So that's how he would appear.
Let me ask the obvious question let me address the elephant in the room. What do you say to someone that says this is just a way to put an image on a video screen and claim that it would be my grandfather?
Yeah, well, that's why grandfather will also be talking and also be able to provide information independently. And again, this can all occur computer automated without any of the experimenters in the building. So there's no question of them impacting it. And all of this will be evaluated by independent scientists, professional skeptics, magicians, and so on. As Dr. Schwartz's research has been, for example, as he described in his book, The Afterlife Experiments. But to get back to your question about the soul video, David Bohm gave some information to Dr. Schwartz through a couple of the mediums. He said, we are visible to the human eye. It's just that we only can be perceived one or two frames out of every 10,000 frames that the eyes process. And so that perhaps explains why a person will feel like they saw somebody out of the corner of their eye. You know, is that my mom or is that my dad? Oh, it must be my imagination. Well, maybe the person really did see for just a moment. So Dr. Schwartz took this information and ran with it. He got a high-speed camera that takes 60,000 frames per minute, put it up against a black screen, and so the control would be you don't ask any, quote, spirits to stand in front of the camera. And so for 10 minutes, you've got a black screen. Okay, that's your control. Then one of the mediums would ask one of the, what they call a hypothesized collaborating spirits to stand in front of the camera. Let's say it's Albert Einstein, and move around some, because the movement is easier to capture than a still person. Well, then if the high-speed camera takes 10,000 frames per minute, and you take it for 10 minutes, you would expect to have at least 20 or 30 images visible to the human eye. Well, then he got a computer specialist from China, a PhD, brilliant woman, and she came up with a proprietary software program to detect anomalous frames. In other words, if you've got 100,000 frames, well, you're going to go through it frame by frame and find one that's different from the others. So this software kicked out then the frames that were different, that had a blurry image, and then those can be put together and be a rudimentary video. All this is very basic right now, crude, but should increase as we go, especially once we have, even with just the switch, Dr. Schwartz will be able to communicate with these scientists much more and say, can I improve upon the soul video research now? Yes. Does it have to do with the software? No. Does it have to do with the hardware? Yes. Does it have to do with the camera? Yes. And then it's kind of like, following a trail to find out then how to improve it. So it's in its very infancy.
And I've got, I'm going to make a, or one last question, and then Steve, I'm going to let you jump in, because I know that the science aspect is Steve's end. But for me, just somebody that has listened to the story and the examples and the examples that you've put forth, I think it would be reasonable for anyone, and it would be reasonable for you to expect anyone to ask this question. It looks like it could be a computer generated program, because you said that there's not going to be any testers in there, so there won't be any kind of interference. What's someone, what prevents somebody from thinking that it's just a algorithm that kicks out answers and puts kind of a different image or whatever it would be for the video aspect. And with the voice, I'm assuming that I wouldn't be able to actually hear my grandfather's voice. So all of the aspects of what I would expect to see on the other end of that call are different in some way. And that's being explained as it's a manifestation of who or what he is on the other side. And how do you answer somebody that says that's just a convenient explanation for a program that is essentially creating this being on the other side that is a connection to the person that they once loved and lost?
Sure. Excellent question. Sure. And the answer is, keep in mind, again, in the very beginning, there will be confirmatory tests. So if you could ask, let's say you see a hazy image and hear a voice, it doesn't sound like your grandfather, but you could ask questions that were answered either via the yes or no, or the text, or a voice that was discernible, yes or no. And you went through a series of questions. You know, for me, did we have a dog named Snoopy when I was a kid? Yes or no. Did we live on Woodward Avenue? Yes or no. Asking detailed questions that only your grandfather would know. You know, grandfather, did you have a dog when I was a little kid named this? You get a series of answers like this. Also, we've done some early research so far that the computer would show images. For example, it would show a picture of you when you were a little kid and say, Grandpa, was this me when I was a child? Yes. Then show a picture of a total stranger. Was this me when I was a child? No. Again, a series of images like this. Was this our house? And so on. So after some point,
do you have the data on that? Sorry, I didn't interrupt you, but do you have the data on that people can actually go through and see, like, how many instances it's actually, you know, asking these specific questions or identifying these pictures correctly? Like, what are the statistics on that?
Yeah, there's just early. Keep in mind, this is very early. There's data, and it's been replicated. But will it be released? No, we've just started talking to one investor. So this is so early on. And of course, patent is, what's it called, intellectual property, IP, and so on, needs to be protected. So none of that will be revealed now. But will be eventually when Dr. Schwartz writes up the scientific papers that are published.
Okay, Steve, I'll let you jump in and...
Okay. Yeah, I have a lot of questions on the science, but before we get to the science, on the data analysis that you're doing that Kyle has asked about, when it comes to the statistical significance of the hit rate, if I'm having a communication with somebody, let's say like the deceased uncle or something like that, for one, I won't be able to ask them any specificities of questions, such as where did I leave something or where did he leave something before he died? I won't get a specific answer, correct? And if I'm asking yes or no, if he answers the wrong question, if I say, is it true this condition, and they get it wrong, is that due to a bad connection, or what is the statistical significance of them not getting the question correct if I'm actually having a communication with somebody who should know these answers?
Yeah. what Dr. Schwartz wants is 98% reliability and accuracy. You know, but what early technology works that well all the time? And it's a good observation that matters like this, whether it's mediums or this sort of work, are held to a much higher expectation of results than, you know, for example, a superstar baseball player hits 300, hits 3 out of 10 times to the plate. But certainly we would expect, let's say, in the 90% range, which would be, you know, Dr. Schwartz is a big statistics man, but what are the chances that your questions could be answered 9 out of 10 times repeatedly? They're off the charts stat-wise.
And where is it at right now, according to technology? Where would you say that the consistency rate is above statistical Where would you say it is compared to what we would get from just random chance?
Mm-hmm. It's around 90% so far, the accuracy from these early
experiments. And that data is not available yet? It's not available for publication review yet?
No, my goodness. And by the way, that's why really we're not doing any media interviews right now. But Kyle and I have been in touch. I agreed to do this one, but it's really early to talk about this.
Can I ask what you present to your investors, though, if they're asking about your statistical review process, the way you're actually doing your methodology, if they want to see that it's above norm? And as Kyle very astutely pointed out, how do they know that it's not just an algorithm type thing or just random chance? There has to be a significant value that you're doing your analysis on. So do they, any of them, ask for that methodological approach that you're taking and what, that you can reject the null hypothesis on this?
Yeah, well, first of all, we haven't approached any investors yet, but one approached us a few weeks ago who owns a tech company. His father passed on, and he was a atheist, this fellow. But after his dad died, I thought, well, I'll look at the evidence. He went to a medium and had a very meaningful experience, multiple specific bits of information that no one could have known. And then he started searching, and the cell phone kept popping up. And so that's when he contacted us about his interest. And we'll be meeting with him probably about 2 weeks when there will be a demonstrable soul switch device to show.
Okay. Let's kind of dive into the science real quick. So you mentioned some things about the energy. Are you saying that, one, we've established dualism as opposed to well, are you saying that the mind can exist independent of a physical substrate? And if that's the case, what are they using to quantify the consciousness? What units of energy are they using to say this is the amount of energy we can actually use in empirical data or formalization?
Yeah, you're beyond me, Steve. I'm a healer. I'm a teacher. I'm a counselor. I'm the spokesperson, but Dr. Schwartz is a big science guy, so I can't answer
okay,
that.
So,
great question.
Because on the page under Dr. Schwartz, he talks about frequency of photons spanning electricity and radio waves. This seems to be a lot to deal with, a type of electromagnetic radiation. And so is the technology somehow using electromagnetic radiation in incorporation to communicate with the deceased?
Yeah, there are actually 8 different methods. One measures changes in electromagnetic information or electromagnetic radiation, another movement, another sound, another video. So there are 8 different ways, and he's working on these, and he also has this team that's working to see which one's going to come to fruition first, because it's unknown. I mean, this is totally unprecedented research.
And he doesn't have yet a causal mechanism by which they're communicating, by which they can interact with a physical.
Well, it would depend on what device you're talking about, but they're being...
Either one, the video, for the video, what's the causal mechanism by which the video is being manipulated that we can see some kind of, let's say we have an indicator, right? We have a whatever your indication system is, a needle or whatever. There has to be something that actually causes that to happen, right? There has to be a causation. What is the mechanism by which the deceased is using whatever to cause that causation? Do we see something as a physical indicator that it is the deceased we're talking to?
Is this guy smart or what, Kyle? The mechanism is the same mechanism that allows us to see each other. In other words, they have energy that can manifest, can be picked up by photographic film. Einstein said one time through one of the mediums, we are historical energy systems that tend to show ourselves in a way that the observers will be able to acknowledge. So when these, quote, deceased luminaries show themselves to the mediums, they've got tweed jackets on and a pipe and so on, much like they did when they were Oxford professors. However, that's not the way they look all the time. It's just one of various permutations they can choose.
Kyle, we do have some questions for the live feed. Want me to get to those.
Yeah, I just had one follow up. Have you personally tried this yourself? Have you tried to contact somebody on the other
not
side?
Yet. And no, it's no, not yet.
Why is
it's
that?
Not quite ready for that. I'll be one of the first. Well, it's not quite ready for that. That's why I say you you guys have a big scoop here because we're not doing any further media till probably next year because it's just too early to answer a lot of these questions.
Here's my concern with that. My concern is I remember when I lost my grandfather, I thought the world had ended. I mean, I was lost without that. And if I had heard that there was a way, especially right after he had passed, to somehow keep in communication with him, I would have jumped at it. As skeptical as I am, in that mind frame, I'm just have that desire to, you know, if there's a small chance it could be possible, I would take it. Is it ethical to make the claims without having the mechanisms to produce that and sort of stir that, you know, desire within someone or get somebody's hopes up? Like, how do you answer that? Like, is that something that is the right thing to do?
Well, first of all, we do want to provide hope, but we want it to be hope based on evidence. So again, Dr. Schwartz has been working on these technological devices for 11 years, lots of proof of concept studies, some of which are described on the soulphone.org site. But now these prototypes, stage one and stage two prototypes. So there's lots of good science behind. We're not offering false hope. And certainly no one will have a chance to experience any of the devices until they're reliably working. I don't know. I'm 65 years old. I've met a lot of people, but I don't know anybody with more integrity and caring than Dr. Schwartz.
But you say it's good science. How is it good science if there's no documentation by which you could be actually evaluating this over statistical normal variation of some kind? I mean, to have good science, you have to have a hypothesis. You have to be able to look at that hypothesis, experiment on it, right? And then be able to determine whether you can reject the null of the hypothesis. That's good science. What you have now is a concept. But it's not science. It's a concept.
Yeah, actually, it's beyond that, Steve. But as I say, it's so early that none of it's being published. Dr. Schwartz wants the university to announce it since this research has been occurring under the university, on the university and with university funds. He wants to write it up before the big announcements. So, no, the science is there. The research is there. All along, Dr. Schwartz has had a team of scientists observe. No one can find any shortcomings with it. So, fellas, it's been a long day for me. We've been at an hour, and I really do need to go. If we can wrap it up, please.
Yeah, we have some super chats. And by the way, Gary Swartz, sure. his wife Rhonda, she was the producer for Gary Edwards Crossing Over, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
John Edwards.
No, she.
John Edwards.
No,
yeah.
She was. Yeah. No,
does he have
she
anything
was never
to do with the project? Well, she was a host. I'm sorry.
No, she was not. She was never involved in TV.
She was never involved with Crossing Over with John Edwards?
No, she was never a TV producer.
Okay, because I read somewhere
Steve,
that she had been involved with that. But anyways,
we'll do the super chats in the...
Well, there's some questions for him if he has time.
Show. Yeah, because there's... he said that he's got to go, so we'll do the super chats in the after show.
Yeah, I've been recording all day and seeing patients half the day. So, I thought this was an hour show, and I really do need to go.
Yeah, we did go over, and we appreciate you hanging tight with us. You can the super chats people. What they do is people they pay to do a like a comment and kind of comment on the show questions. We're actually we'll just stay on Steve and get those knocked out of the way. And you can just click the browser close. It'll take you right out of the call. And that way you don't have to hang around for us reading that. But we do appreciate you coming by and keep us updated on the progress as it comes along.
Yeah, it will be exciting, and we'll all look forward to seeing that. Take care.
All right.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, so that went about as was as I thought. I thought it was important to lay out the groundwork. And Steve, when you came in with the science aspect of it, the biggest takeaway from it all, I think, is that the claims of the science being there, but not able to be to put forth what that science is. This stems from, and the reason that I kind of dived into his past is because what I see is it stems from an inert feeling when he was young. He always felt this sort of being different, this attachment to death and the afterlife. And this is just an example, I think, of a project that fit what his ideology was, or his, you know, his,
sure. I'm a little disappointed because I knew we only had an hour, and I had asked you, he only had an hour, and you said he didn't have he had as long as we needed, because I knew he was going to run. I knew he had an hour. He had said before that they only had an hour. So I really wanted to get to the questions because the questions were tailored for him. Well, how do I know he only had an hour?
I don't know.
He told us.
Maybe you're clairvoyant too. I didn't hear that.
It wouldn't matter anyway.
The reason that I told him he could go ahead and go is because he is not going to put forth any kind of different answers than what he put forth. We sussed out everything that we could from him, and this would just be a game of him continuing to repeat what he just said. I don't know how you, if maybe you heard him say that he had an hour. I didn't hear him say that he had an hour.
Well, not.
Was that?
He had told us before. I mean, in one of the correspondents, something I remember very specifically. Only an hour, because remember we were supposed to have an hour with him, then an hour with Landon, and which is a volcano thing after this. But Landon couldn't do it.
You'll have to find that. I said that I want if we did Landon's episode, I want to keep it at an hour so we don't go over 3 hours.
No, I remember doing it on a line. I knew from experience, as soon as we start getting the hard hitting, that's when they're done. That's when they say, you know, I have to go. That's a given. But the questions were directly for him, but unfortunately we can't ask him now, and I apologize to the people that have asked the questions, but we might as well get him out of the way anyways. Maybe we can kind of try to ask, answer them.
He wouldn't have answered it anyway.
That's the whole point. I want to show that he can't answer these questions. That's the whole point showing that this is a long con.
I think we did that during the course of this interview, that he is not able to answer any serious question. It's all Dr. Schwartz. Dr. Schwartz has the answers. The guy wasn't going to put forth anything. And he said he was ready to go, so let him go.
Like I said, I'm a lot more hard hitter. I mean, when it comes to the science, I expect when people make these kind of claims, I'm going to go for the jugular. That's it. I'm going to go for the jugular. But anyways, let's get to the questions. We're quick with the super chats. Prodigy FX, $5. If there's such a thing as a credible medium, then why hasn't anybody claimed the James Randi $1 million prize? James Randi did that for a long time with JREF. That prize is no longer available because they figured after 20 years, you know. And by the way, we know that nobody was ever going to claim that. And if somebody did get it, it was going to be just because of random chance. Because eventually there is going to be somebody that wins something. Just like there's going to be one person that predicts the lottery numbers, and it's going to be completely random chance, but it's bound to happen, right? So it doesn't mean that they actually have that ability to do so. It just means they got lucky. Godless Engineer, $5. How does the soul retain information stored in organic brain cells? I have no idea. That's a great question. I really wanted to get in the dualism aspect because he started talking a lot about dualism, and I'm sorry, we've never demonstrated that the mind can exist independent of a physical substrate. That has never happened. There's no science that has ever said that, right? So for him to say that this is based upon science, I'm sorry, that's just wrong. It's just outright wrong. You can't claim something is science if you're not doing science. And science is an approach. Science is a methodological approach to things, right? There's no methodology here. If you can't explain the methodology, you can't claim it as science, right?
Well, also, I'd like to point out, which, hi everybody.
Oh, hey, I'm tapped out, so I didn't see you sneak in. I'm not even looking at the VMix call, so cool.
Well, I mean, the way that he described this quote-unquote phone is a high frame, like a high-speed camera is taking a video of an area in front of a person or somewhere, and they're like asking questions, and then they tape for 10 minutes, and then they use computer software to search through all of the frames in order to find distortions in the light. And yep. What I have to ask about that is, how do you determine between pareidolia and like an actual ghost? You know,
I think technically it'd be aprophenia, because I mean, I don't think you're looking for like a face. I don't think it's going to be pareidolia, because that would be more like looking for an image. Well, I think they're looking for information in that data and correspondence for some kind of.
Exactly. Like pareidolia isn't just faces, though. It's like. It's noticing.
Image pattern of some kind. But the aprophenia is when you have a pattern for the information, and I think that's more what they're going to be trying to do. And they're going to be trying to find. They're going to try to say, "Look, here's a correlation here that doesn't exist, or spurious correlations of some kind."
Okay, Steve, have you watched any ghost shows at all?
I used to do debunking with Sci-Fake. Okay. Who actually debunked?
How many high definition ghosts have you seen on those shows? Like are blobs.
Right. I mean, if you have like random noise, right? If I just have white noise, like a TV, one of the old type TVs, and I see a pattern of some kind, I think I see a face. That's pareidolia. If I'm looking for a pattern in the data, saying, okay, here's my yes or no questions, and they say yes, or they say no, and I'm getting a statistical analysis, and I'm looking for some kind of weird pattern out of all this. That's aprophenia.
That's not what they're doing, though.
I was specifically talking about the visual detection element of it, and that would be pareidolia, not I would think that what you're talking about would apply to asking the questions, but right. it wouldn't be like the visual aspect of it is what I was talking.
Yeah, if you're looking for a face or something, then that. But you see, there's soul switch, which is the yes or no, and then there's soul video, which is. Which again, I knew there was like, oh, I'm going to be like seeing my dead, you know, uncle, right? And Kyle pointed out, is the voice going to be the same? No, there's nothing to relate that information to the individual that you're discussing with, right? I mean, there's no way. Yeah, of course it is.
And the question that I have for you, Steve, do you still hold tight to the he honestly truly believes?
Yeah, what did you feel? He honestly truly believes this. He is a true believer. He doesn't know enough about the science. He's just relying on Dr. Schwartz. Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. Everything that he described in his quote-unquote phone, they already do on the ghosty shows. Like with the switch, you've got like a flashlight that you can adjust to where you barely have to touch it and it blinks on and off. You can ask it's no questions. They've even got like a little handheld thing that
Ghost talk or something? Huh? What's it called? Like a ghost talker? A ghost box. No, not EVP. A ghost box. Spirit box? Spirit box. Thank you. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, the spirit box.
Well, no. That's the thing. Okay, so the spirit box is basically where you have a handheld sort of speaker, and what it does is it quickly switches between the different bands of frequency. And then you're supposed to be able to hear the ghost come through in the static, basically the white noise, right? So that's what the spirit box is. Now, what I'm talking about is they've got a separate handheld device. I can't think of what it's called right now. Watch any ghosty show, they have it. But it's a handheld device that I guess detects electromagnetic like changes or whatnot. And
is it an LED meter?
No, well, they've got that. They've got that. That's similar in function to the like light, the handheld flashlight. No, this one it actually associates like different changes with words. So basically, you ask a question and then you wait for this thing to give you like answers. And I have no idea the rationale behind whatever kind of fluctuations it's detecting and it translating it into words. Because I sincerely doubt it's actually based on science. I feel like they have like a pre-programmed set of words factored in there that's set to different values. And then that is what comes across. So you could easily manipulate it for whatever kind of situation you're in.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is the same situation with random phone.
If you watch those ghost shows, the ghosts always say the most random sentences. Like, it's never anything that makes a
car,
bit of sense.
Football, I was watching chair, it earlier today that said,
I have the body of a pig. Like, that was the that was what it put out. I have the body of a pig. I mean, if you're a ghost and you're having the opportunity to talk to actual people, you'd come up with something better than I have the body of a pig, I think.
Well, that's what I want to know. Is it a bad connection when they say something like that? I mean, if you can't get any usable, actionable intelligence out of the communication, right? Like if I said, hey, uncle, where'd you leave the will? And he can't tell me longitude and latitude, what good is it, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, see, the thing is with all of these woo people, like with the ghost hunters and everything like that, everything is as vague as it can be because then they can translate it into something meaningful and they can make it mean something meaningful. Like, you know, it's like when they go into like a Scottish castle and they're sitting there calling out to it in like, you know, American English. And it's like, are you here? And they're like, yeah, I sure am. Hey,
yeah. Like, yeah, that's true. That the ghost always speaks the language of the person asking for some reason, right? Now, I guess you could argue, well, after you're dead, you know multiple languages and stuff. But you're right. What they do is it's the brain making these connections. It's the brain finding the patterns. The science doesn't give a shit about the mind. The science is the raw data, and the raw data has never supported that this is anything beyond just your mind filling in the blanks, your mind making something significant to the person asking the questions.
The A-team was the biggest thing that the biggest revelation that I took away from this. The fact that it's not only them two that are developing cell phone, but it's also Albert Einstein, Nikola Tesla, all of these brilliant minds that have passed on, and the explanation for how they know that it's these guys are that when they run it through the machine, whatever that is that's formulating these responses, it's giving them the right answers to the questions that they're asking. So the obvious question is, who wrote the program that is answering these questions? Because if it's just a machine doing it, obviously the obvious answer is that it's programmed to do that. It's programmed to give you a specific set of data.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it is. Though. I mean, without looking at their protocol, there's no way to know. If they're running an algorithm, then clearly they know that it's completely fraud, right? I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. If you're writing a program that's going to try to emulate a computer response, right, and do like a Turing test kind of thing, that's complete fraud. I don't think this guy is like that because I think he's relying upon other people, because you notice he's deferring, right? So he doesn't have the background and the science to even to address it, but which is weird because he's supposed to have a PhD in, I think, was it clinical psychology or something?
Master's in clinical psychology. He's got his doctorate in he's a chiropractor.
Okay.
Oh, he's a chiropractor. Okay. this explains everything.
But even still, you would think he has some kind of back. I mean, you have to know some kind of statistical methodology to get any kind of benefit.
No, not for chiropractic. Chiropractic.
Well, he has an MD. No, I mean, he has a master's in psychology.
Okay, well, I mean, I got to give him that, but I mean, the whole chiropractic thing. I mean, honestly, once you take out a Black and Decker to massage my feet and cure my cancer, I'm done with talking to you.
Well, there's two types of chiropractors. There's ones that promote subluxations, right? Those are the quack. Right. If you go to a chiropractor and they start talking about subluxations, walk out. But if they go to a chiropractor and they say, okay, we're going to do this, you know, a little manipulation, heat, or you know, electricity to stimulate the muscles, that's all fine and dandy, right? Because any doctor is going to do that kind of stuff. But some chiropractors, they're the old traditional quackery type. They believe that subluxations can cure everything if you fix that, and it's nuts, just complete bullshit. But I've been to a chiropractor, and I got to tell you, for certain types of lower back problems, it helped tremendously. So I just can't say that they're all bad. A vast majority, don't get me wrong, but there is some benefits to a good chiropractor that doesn't get into the old bullshit type stuff.
I just cracked my neck. Am I a chiropractor now? Can I start doing chiropractic things?
Well, I mean, I want somebody that knows how to adjust the spine if they're going to manipulations.
Move my what?
Yeah, no, you can. I mean, there are certain aspects that is legit in chiropractic. There's a lot that's not legit, but that's the same as any kind of field, I guess.
Yeah, just to preface, I think I disagree. I'm on Steve's side about this. I think that the chiropractors that don't try to fluff up and woo up their practice about their back cracking, I think that those are fine as long as it's not promoting anything more than what it actually is.
Right, right. And they're very, very few. My argument would be is, why call them chiropractors? Why don't they just, you know, they're I don't see anything specific about chiropractor that somebody else couldn't do with you know, just a nominal amount of training, right? Because the basic shit that they do, you know, like, for example, like if I put a warming pad on somebody, do I have to have a significant amount of training to understand the difference between how heat and cold affects a muscle? Not really, right?
Depending on where you put it, Steve.
This is true.
Yeah. So needle, okay, you know, so
like electrical current theory.
So back to the super chats, though, for the Solga, instead of talking smack about back cracking.
you want more super chats? Okay. By the way, that was a good question, by the way. How does Sol retain information stored in organic brain cells? Frick if I know, dude. That's why I asked. Didn't I ask about mechanisms? There's no answers there.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't seem to actually answer any direct questions. I mean, it seemed like it's like he's got to preface everything with like a long explanation and then not answer the question.
The data is there, but we can't show it to you. Go ask Dr.
It would have, you know, it would have been the same thing. It'd have been a long-winded explanation of something that had nothing to do with the question.
I mean, I'm very wary when somebody says the data is there, but we can't show it to you. Okay, because that has. I'm sorry, but how is the data intellectual property? I mean, it is to a degree, but why is it confidential intellectual property? If you're trying to convince somebody that this is real, wouldn't you want to show them the preliminary data results? I mean, that could be the raw data, right? You don't have to explain your entire protocol. There's no raw data to be had. You just throw out numbers.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. Like, if they're hoping to like really market the product and everything like that, I could see them being secretive about it. Because I mean, like pharmaceutical companies and whatnot, they would wait. I would assume that they would wait. Like, if they were developing some kind of like new drug that revolutionized something, like they would want to publish, like get their stuff like patented and everything like that, so that nobody could undercut them and produce stuff and then lose money.
Why not? Huh? But that's nothing to do with the efficacy. I mean, if you want to look at the efficacy of the drug, they can say, hey, we, you know, here's our preliminary things to show there's a statistical correlation between the drug and what we expect to happen to show that it is causing an effect. That's just data, right? I mean, that's not revealing any of the chemical nature of it or anything like that. It's just saying, here's our chart. We gave this many people this drug. It had this much effect. We think there's a reason to say that it works. That's all.
Right.
That's just raw data. I just say nothing wrong with releasing that.
Well, right. What I will say is that like they see that they act like they're a year away from producing anything physical. I would think that if they were that close to actually producing like hardware for it, you would already have the science done and published and everything like that. So I see your point there, and I was really not trying to like defend the guy for hiding his data. I think that the most ethical thing to do is definitely to produce your data, but I don't know. The guy just seemed to be like he was hiding behind that veiled secrecy of, oh, well, we're waiting to put it out.
He answered it though. The reason that they haven't put out the science yet. It's because they don't have an investor yet. Money is the motivating factor. He said that three times. I counted that we've got a guy that's interested, but we haven't ironed out the deal yet. If this was such, you know, so groundbreaking, they wouldn't be holding out for an investor. This would be something that, and you heard me ask him, have you tried this yourself? If this was something that worked, if this was something that had a remote possibility of being true, that I would be the first person in there trying that device out to see if it worked. I'd be every day trying to get an answer out there. But he said, nope, haven't done it yet. I mean,
yeah, that's weird, isn't it? That, yeah, I think I would be trying it too, right? Okay, Kent Hovind, CPA, $2. He must have really liked this episode. A dollar more than usual. Thank you, Kent Hovind, CPA. Patrick Mahomes is God and he's real. I don't know who that is, so somebody can fill me in.
Nobody? Sounds good to me. Okay.
Sounds good. Boho Hobo, 50DKK. I love to hear about the camera on the other side, especially the specs of the transmission equipment, bandwidth modulation. Yeah, there's no way this guy was going to even be able to touch any of that.
Wait,
right?
So there's a camera, like, I guess maybe I missed some parts of it or whatnot, but like, so there's a camera on our side and then there's a camera on the Spirit side?
No, you just get a screen. No, you're going to be in front of a screen and it's going to put forth some type of image. Now, he said that it could be various forms of imagery. So basically what I'm imagining is it's the whatever algorithm they've got going is going to generate some sort of picture. And that's supposed to represent the form that your loved one is choosing to use in order to talk to you. So basically you're at the mercy of a generated thing, a generated voice, generated answers, generated image. It's all it's an algorithm. I'm telling you, that's the kicker to this. It's an algorithm.
Yeah. And very well could be, it's either an algorithm or just random noise. That's of some kind, right?
Well, didn't he talk about like providing a picture of your loved one that you're trying to contact or something like that?
He said that it would be able to distinguish between the, like, he gave an example. If he were to put a picture of you and a picture of the strain of a strain to that image of your loved one, it would be able to, one was you, like you said, it would be a yes or no.
Based on the problem I have, huge problem I have with that though. Yeah. Is that look it, if you're going to do something like that, you need to design the electronics, right? And the electronics to do that has to have some kind of causal mechanism by which it knows what information is going into it, how to interpolate it, and how to put it out to where it's going to be effectively a communication to the person on the other side. You have to design that electronics. Show me those electronics. Show me the theory behind the electronics I'll even be happy with. But that he has nothing.
Well yeah, you would expect him, like, at this point, like, if he's trying to gather investors and everything for the phone, you would want to convince the investors. So, I mean, you would want to get your shit, right, like, published in peer-reviewed article or journals and whatnot. You would want to have, like, actual substantial backing behind your claims, but he just doesn't have any of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let me ask, if you were a potential investor and you had listened to that interview we just did, would you want to give you this guy money to invest?
Fuck no. Okay, I'm not going to pay so that he can get a super like a super speed camera, and then whoever the fuck he can get to write a program to dump whatever kind of information out. Like, I mean, he would have to have significant science, like provable, like peer-reviewed science behind, like, his actual machine that's supposed to give you the information. Because otherwise you can, like, you know, taking readings of electromagnetic radiation, which, by the way, is pretty much any spectrum of light, X-ray, gamma ray, visible light, anything like that would be electromagnetic radiation. And so to be able to translate that into any kind of information that we can understand, you would need to have, like, good evidence to have that translation. And it just seems like he does, like, he either has it and he's not willing to release it to people, or he just simply doesn't have it and he's blowing smoke up everybody's ass, which I'm guessing that's the one that it is.
It's the latter. And the scary thing is, there are people that are willing to do this. I listened all day yesterday and today to the podcast that he's been on, and all of them that I listened to, all of them that I could find, this was probably the only one that he's done, because as you could tell, he was very skittish about coming on. He canceled two times already. And he doesn't do, it seems, a lot of shows that ask questions about what they do. And the ones that I've seen him on were all pro his standpoint. There's a podcast, and I forget the name of it now, but it's two associated by two women, and they dive into the paranormal world. But they were just glowing about it, just like, "Oh, this is amazing, listeners! You have to go and check this out. This is going to be a real thing." So there are people out there that absolutely, and it's just like I said in when I was talking to him. It's because you play on a sense of emotion that is probably the strongest, and that's that loss that people feel whenever they lose someone that they love, and people are willing, because that feeling is so strong, to do whatever it takes, even if there's a small possibility that it could be true. And I just think that, especially to do it and not have the science behind it. Like, it's one thing to do it and have something that you claim is the science that you're able to know, even though it may be incorrect. But to do that without saying, or by saying, "Well, we haven't got to that phase yet. We haven't crossed that step yet." To promise or to make claim that you're able to produce someone's loved one on a video before you're even able to hypothesize how that would be possible, I just think it's just unethical. I
would like to jump in before we go on to the next super chats, and say that people like this guy who are hiding behind, you know, their information or whatnot, and are promoting it to people who have lost somebody that's, you know, near and dear to them, almost 100% of the time, these people end up being like predators. Like, you know, like they prey on people, they prey on their emotions, they get them to donate their money or give them their money so that they can talk to their, you know, deceased relative. But they play on that emotion of like losing somebody that's close to you. Like, that's what they prey on. They everybody has lost somebody, and everybody wants to be able to talk to them again. Of course, I mean, we're not able to do that, obviously, but these people see that need and they're like, "Oh, well, I can give them, you know, that feeling, you know, I can give them the feeling of talking to their dead relative," when they're not actually talking to their dead relative. I mean, if you've watched any of those, was it The Crossing Over with John, whatever the fuck his name is?
John Edwards.
Yeah. See, the way that he does it is it's cold reading, but when you go into one of those tapings or whatnot, you have to fill out a card and it takes certain information. And then John Edwards guy has like people in his ear that feed him information. And then he just pretty much gets a whole bunch of darts in his hand, throws them at the board, and he starts spouting off shit that they keep telling him until he finally hits somebody. And then he runs the gambit there again with trying to get information from them. And then once he's got them hooked, he just tells them, "Oh, they're happy. I don't actually see them. I feel colors," or some kind of shit. And they're happy. And they forgive you.
I'm glad you said that, because in the podcast that I listened to, on that same one with those girls that hosted and talked to him, he cites that he names off about six different very prominent mediums, John Edwards being one of them. He's involved in the study that they keep talking about. He names him as one of the ones that Dr. Schwartz uses.
Dr. Schwartz has tested John Edwards.
So John Edwards is involved in this.
Yes, that's what I asked him, and I think he actually lied about that, or he's just completely unaware, and I don't see how he could be, because, I mean, if you go to Wiki, and you even look at Wiki, Gary Schwartz, it says right in there, "Schwartz performed experiments at the University of Arizona testing mediums such as John Edwards of the show Crossing Over and Allison DuBois, who inspired the TV show's Medium," right? And I believe he met his wife. Yeah, no, his wife was involved in the show Crossing Over, I'm sure of it.
His wife's a medium. I don't think she was involved in that show, but she is a medium that wrote a book and all that other sort of
stuff. Yeah, I know she's a medium. Talk about that. But I know she was involved in that show somehow. I just don't remember the exact link.
Well, yeah, it's odd because he seemed to want to bolt like immediately after you started bringing that.
I knew that was going to happen. I even told Kyle that. Mm-hmm. I said, "I'm going to ask some hard questions," and I said, "He's got an hour. He's going to leave." I even told him that. I knew. I called it. I mean, this is a given how this works. Not a big surprise. Because he was not expecting hard questions. Like Kyle said, he's only been on shows and podcasts where they just gush over this stuff, right? That they buy into it, hook, line, and sinker. He was not ready to have somebody actually have some pushback.
If I can make a recommendation for a show, but it's kind of old, but it's Penn and Teller's Bullshit. It's a I felt like it's a very good show. Huh? You have?
Oh, I've watched every episode of Bullshit. And you know, what's funny is even they, though, they, I wish they would have done some shows differently, because they even gone back and reviewed it and said, you know what, that show sucked. We could have done it better this way. But you know what? The premise was brilliant, though, right?
Oh, yeah. The very first episode of that show, which I think it's still available on Amazon through their video streaming platform. But the very first show is on like these people that can contact the other side. And it explains like the methods of cold reading and how John Edwards works, like in his taping and everything like that. So, I mean, it's a very educational show, I found. I think there's a pretty famous one on vaccines where they think the logic through on vaccines, and it's quite good.
Penn and Teller are brilliant, I think, just in general. Okay, Steve, pop another live chat or
question. Insect Facet, $5. Have you thought about exploiting the energy gradient between the two worlds to generate infinite clean power? It can't possibly go wrong. That would be, you know, well, it's funny. He mentions 0 point something, and I don't remember what he said. 0 point, I don't know. It wasn't 0 point energy, right? Now, there is something called 0 point energy, but the problem is it's not usable energy. It's already at ground level, right? To have usable energy, we have to have some kind of potential difference, right? If I have a cliff and I have ground level, I can roll a cliff off and it falls off, I can get energy out of that, right? Potential to kinetic energy. But if you have something that's already at ground level, you can't drop anything further down. So you're already at the lower state of energy level. That's 0 point energy. So yes, there's a ubiquitous field of energy that exists everywhere, but the fact that it's ubiquitous and it permeates everything means it's not usable. Right? And a lot of people, they try to exploit that bullshit by saying, well, there's energy all around us. Sure. But it's not usable.
Isn't 0 point like energy? What didn't that play like a major role in like Stargate or something?
I was just gonna say,
like, I want to say
there
was a
Stargate Atlantis
ZPM.
ZPM, yeah, huh? Yeah, ZPM modules. That's what powered their Stargates and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said,
it's impossible. It's impossible. Again, you can't extract energy from a state of lowest potential energy. You just can't. I mean, that's why you can't have over unity. You can't have devices that violate the second law of thermodynamics because you can't have more energy going out of a system than you're putting in. That's actually, it's so much of a known thing that even the patent office won't even look at patents anymore for over unity devices. They're all bullshit. Caitlin Chloe, $5. How much money is this costing? Who's funding it? Great question. I have. Who the frick knows? That was $1 million question.
Who's funding?
I mean, that literally is the $1 million question.
There's one. I don't think anybody.
Yeah, one person. Looking at. Yeah. The technical name for that is sucker, though. Athena, Goddess of Wisdom and Warfare, $2. Can you blame us for being skeptical? No, I don't think. I don't think they mind people being skeptical, right? I think, like, again, he's not able to answer the tough questions. That's the giveaway. When you have pushback, that's when they're like, okay, well, this is no longer me just, you know, being able to throw out bullshit and have fluff. Now I'm expected to actually, you know, back my claims up. They're done at that point.
He was correct that I am a open-minded skeptic, that I have the willingness to change my mind if you show me I should. And
well, I think it's most people in general.
That's not most people.
I was interested in this show because I was hoping that he would have some kind of like science to back up. I kind of figured he wouldn't have actual science, but I was hoping at least he'd have some kind of explanation, you know?
Something.
I think most
right?
people,
I mean,
though,
anything.
As a whole aren't really open minded in turn when they get entrenched in what, you know, they're. Everybody's got a belief that they hold tight to, you know, the one that I'm not going to let go. But this would probably be mine. Like, I don't think that I could ever be convinced that there is a possibility of a way to communicate with somebody. So when he actually was describing the person, you know, when he said you're not like the skeptic that just this is bullshit, you know, this will never happen. In this case, that's dead on me right now. You know, like, I don't think that's a possibility whatsoever.
I grant we all have things, like, for example, I don't believe in unity devices, like, for example. Anybody, I think, can be convinced with overwhelming evidence, but it takes overwhelming evidence, right? Most of us, we do have things, like you said, that we hold to be true and very, very strongly. But I don't think I have any position that, not given enough evidence, that I can't change, that I can think of the top of my head. Maybe I do, but off the top of my head, I can't.
That would just put you in an outlier.
What? Really? You think I'm an outlier on that?
And I am not a skeptic, live chat. Although that is a good
thing. I don't know if I'm really an outlier, but maybe.
I'll give you that.
KC again, $2. Get G up in there. Hey, G is up in there. He's deep up in there. Oshkosh, $2. Seems like wishful thinking gone too far, which is like, did you not hear when I said you don't have science, you have a concept? Because that's exactly what he is. That's all they have.
He doesn't even have a concept.
Well, no, there's a concept there. No, I disagree. There's definitely a concept there, but the concept is not a good concept. But it's a concept.
Also, I'd like to point out how, in order to attract an investor, in order to actually pump money into it, they would at least have to have like a proof of concept model that could be shown off. But I mean, this is a basic like way that you do things. Like, I know when I was doing some freelance software engineering work, like I was paid a little bit to produce a proof of concept, and then it was up to the customer to either go forward with it or not. And so like that, like it either somebody pays you to do it or you pump your own like money and time into it to produce a proof of concept to convince people. And that's not like he's going a Bass Ackwards way of actually
You're exactly right. I love the fact you said proof of concept. Does anybody see any proof of concept here? Because I see zero. Proof of concept. There is a concept, but there's no proof of it. AC Castillo, exactly $2.
As I thought it would yesterday. I predicted.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This very show.
Yeah, no. I'm exactly, and I knew he wasn't going to stick around. She's like started asking questions. AC Castillo, $2. Seems a wizard came to explain the science. Thank you very much. What was that comment? He's like, oh, this guy's smart. I'm like, because I'm asking basic questions that most of us who have any kind of scientific background would ask. I mean, you're breaking up hard, by the way. Gee, was my questions in any way really that technical? They were pretty basic.
No,
right?
No. I thought you were asking some pretty basic like questions that needed to be answered. I mean, it's not like you were exactly asking him to explain the quantum like theories and everything like that.
Oh, I would have loved to see it. Yeah, exactly. I would have gotten into doing like, you know, actual radio electromagnetic radiation and have him explain to me using formulas what's going on here, you know, but obviously he's not gonna be able to do that.
Well, I felt like him saying electromagnetic radiation was like, I don't know if he knows what that actually is. Like it's to the point. Well, no, I mean, it's to the point where I feel like he just got a whole bunch of science words that seem to apply to whatever he's doing, and then he's just throwing them out there. And he's like, I don't really know the science. It's really this other person that knows the science, but fucking electromagnetic radiation.
Somebody please explain to me electromagnetic radiation relating to dead people. Where's the connect there? Where's the thing that binds them together? Because I don't see how they're in any way related. We have assumed for some reason in a culture that ghosts and spirits can affect us via a electromagnetic radiation. Explain to me somebody where we made that connection from. Where have we ever discovered a ghost where we know that that's what they do? They made an assumption that they could do that for some weird reason, right? I don't even know what the hell that assumption is predicated upon. Well, but there's no data to support that because we don't know what the hell a ghost would or spirit would communicate with us. Would we?
Dan Smith, by the way, put in the live chat, you are now connected to ghost number 20032444.
We're now connecting you to deceased. Yeah.
That was good.
It's kind of frustrating, ain't it?
Yeah. I'm willing to bet that they would use the ether in order to like explain like a connection.
You know what's funny? You mentioned that, dude, right? But you know what? There are people that want to bring back ether theory, right? They want to bring back this notion that we don't need special relativity. We'll go back to ether. And the reason a lot of them are doing that, for exactly that, for some reason in their mind, they correlate ether, as in like Michelson-Morley, luciferous ether, with ether from ectoplasm, right? And there's no relation between the two whatsoever. But they hear those words and there's a mental connect with them. But you know as well as I do that ectoplasm and ether and what they used in mediumship has absolutely nothing to do with the medium, which would be for light propagation. Utterly and distinctly different things. But they want to bring that back. They want to bring back this medium idea that is already It's not parsimonious.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like flat earthers. I mean, all of the woo people. I mean, they hold on to these old ideas. And say, oh, no, this is the true fact, because before that it was, you know, or when science disproved it, it was Illuminati controlled, or NASA did it, or everything's fake. For some reason, older shit is more reliable than newer shit. And I don't know why.
It's very cyclical. It takes its, it's things in waves. You'll have the flat earth thing will die out eventually, or you know, come to a slower move, and something else will come up and take its place, and then, you know, maybe 100, 200 years later, flat earth will have another uprise. It's all of these types of movements are cyclical based on what's going on in the environment.
Why would Tesla be telling us stuff about inductance or capacitance? Like, we don't know what the frick those things are. Is that what we're trying to get out of somebody communicating the dead? Hey, look, he told me what capacitive reactance is. Okay. I mean, it just boggles my mind that we're not getting any usable actual information for any of this.
And it's never anybody like – it would be more believable, I think, if it was somebody like some random guy named Joe or somebody from history that people got wrong. You know what I mean? Like the fact that you're invoking the brilliant minds that – people would be more susceptible to actually believing, you know, what they're doing is they're pulling these characters out to lend some sort of credibility. Like, oh, well, I mean, they're not just getting any ghost. They're getting Einstein. They're getting Tesla.
That's legitimacy.
They're getting
Galileo. That's credence. Come on now. Sure. AC Castillo, $5. Let's knock out this last one. AC Castillo, $5. Soul Phone Foundation. Models do not necessarily describe the exact mechanisms that nature actually uses, but models allow us to create testable predictions. Yeah, that depends if you're a scientific instrumentalist or scientific realist. I'm a scientific instrumentalist. But yeah, they do not necessarily describe the exact things in the universe. But as you said, AC Castillo, if the models explain and make testable predictions, that's all I care about. That's good enough for me. They don't have to actually be the actual reality. I reject the notion that we have to have scientific realism to have a theory that works for us.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. And they currently, right now, it seems like they don't have any of that. Like, there's so many moving parts that they have to be able to explain, and the fact that they're hiding it behind, oh, we're waiting for investors, is not looking good for the soul phone.
I think they jumped the gun. What it boils down to is they jumped the gun, and they're stalling for time until they can put something together that would make it seem like they're justifying, even if it's wrong and in their own terms, what they're saying. I think they came out way too early by saying that they can do these different versions of technology, like the switch. If you've got, you know, what you think are the components to do that, then come out and say it and let it stand up to science and people who test it. But to come out and say that you can do soul video and soul text and a soul app, like they eventually want to make this all into an app that you can put on your phone and literally just call up grandma whenever you get, when you have downtime. Soul app.
Can you just imagine, though, 3 a.m., middle of the night, you know, because 3 a.m. is when ghosty shit happens. You get a call from your grandmother and it's like, hello, dear. I just wanted to say hi. How are you doing? The lines are only open at 3 a.m. I don't know why.
No. It would be more like, stop touching yourself, John. Touching yourself in the middle of the night.
Would there be like
Grandma, that is you.
Would there be like that presidential alert we had today? Would it be like a hotline from God or the devil? You know, this is Shale 65,000, please.
It's funny.
Well, you know,
what conversations you could overhear two ghosts having, you know.
And how would, and again, not to get into some kind of spiritual thing, but hypothetically, how do these guys know they're not talking to demons, right? And of course, I don't believe that, but you have to still, you know, tell people, I mean, because people have these preconceived notions, how you can convince somebody, hey, you know, this is your actual relative. This is not a demon impersonating them, right? Because you hear that all the time, that demons impersonate people, and that's who you're talking to. You're not talking to the dead. You're talking to people. What's that?
They can pick you up in a lineup, obviously. They know which baby picture is you. Demons wouldn't know that, obviously.
Okay, I just had the best idea.
Outside space time. He said all this was outside space time in a way, whatever that meant.
Okay, best idea in the world. A Fox show, detective show called Cell Phone. And it's a cop who's got a cell phone. He solves crimes by calling dead people.
Oh, I think
they have something like that. Speaking dead, yeah.
Actually, there was a show that used a ghost to help the detective solve mysteries. Which that's a show. Hold on.
Well, there was one with Love Hewitt, I think, in it. I can't remember what it's called. It's been a while. She was a medium. She could see ghosts, it helped her do shit.
Ghost Whisperer? Was it Ghost Whisperer?
Ghost Whisperer. No, maybe.
No.
I think so. Maybe.
Yeah,
that was
with. Oh my God, what is her name? Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh man, there's like this.
There's so many ghost shows, guys.
TV shows. And they're all documentaries. They're all based upon, you know, real events.
Well, you know, right now CBS has that. Right now CBS has that God Friended Me show.
Is that any good? I mean, I actually look kind of good. Because, I mean, I like some of those shows. I mean, I love the one with John Ritter's son, and they canceled that. Kevin Saves the World, probably, possibly. That was a great show, and they canceled it. He was a hell of an actor.
Was it on Fox? Because they do a lot of canceling.
Shit, I don't know. All the good shows. Fox is ridiculous for canceling the best shows. Firefly is the greatest mistake in history.
That's the answer to everything. Murder, She Wrote, Randy Griffith. It was one of those two.
Wait, Murder, She Wrote or Andy Griffith?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's one of those two. When you don't know the answer to a TV question, go with one of those two.
Oh, yeah.
You're good at 9 times out of 10. 100%.
I don't think Andy Griffith.
Okay. So, fantastic. Well, that was great. Even though he had an abrupt exit, it went exactly how I thought it would.
To the surprise of nobody.
Exactly. And, it was important to show that he could not give any kind of answers that made sense, any kind of anything but anecdotes in his viewpoints. It's not a shocker. I think everybody expected it to go that way. But I do think that it's important to understand that there are people that do fall into that, that do believe that's a possibility. And I hope that they're able to see something like this instead of the ones where it's just all how wonderful this is, to be able to distinguish that it sounds good. Actually, it doesn't even sound good. in the higher scheme of things, it sounds good, but there's nothing to back it up concretely. And so really what you're just left with are your hopes and desires that this is going to be a thing. But that's all the evidence you're going to have on it. GE?
I think that this guy came in and he didn't have any kind of information. All he had was, hypotheses, if you could call them that.
I don't know if he had that. I think that's stretching it.
Yeah, I don't know. He had ideas. He had ideas. Yeah. And they're nice to think about, but they're not reality. And unless he can prove how he can translate the spirit world into the physical world, I don't see how this is ever going to work.
No, never. No, and you know, mediumship has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, right? This is just a modern version of mediumship. Matter of fact, it even starts off, the initial thing that they did was with mediums. They had a facilitator, right? It's all it is. It's just mediumship for the 21st century, trying to involve technology to make it sound more credible.
I hate it when they do that too, because then it's like, it kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth whenever you know what you're talking about. And to hear people like this, like, say the exact same shit, but they don't know what they're talking about. I don't know. It kind of pisses me off at times.
Yeah, no, it is infuriating because, you know, a lot of people don't realize, like I said, I kind of started years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I've had my channel 5 years now, actually. But back then I was working with a guy named Syfake. He'd been on Fox News and other things, and he used to debunk Long Island Medium, right, and many other types of things. And me and a few other people would constantly be on his videos with him in the live chats, you know, explaining to people what's going on, how to do cold reads, how to do hot reads, what techniques they're using. And then people were like, well, how do they know this? And we would explain to them, this is the technique they use to do this, to pull these stunts off. Like, one of my favorite ones was, you know, when people go to these shows, right, and you know they do the cards and things of that nature, they listen in on the lines. Everybody knows those things. But sometimes they have very, very specific detail. Like, for example, they say, hey, you know, John, you know, you have a grandfather clock that's in the corner of your room or something, right? And you're like, well, how the hell do they know that, right? And I know you don't, because but you see specificities like that. And people will say, well, how do they know that? Well, let me tell you how they know that. Most of these people, where they do a one-on-one type interview, people have been out to their house prior 2 weeks event, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months out even. And they'll go, for whatever reason, they don't have to introduce themselves as producers. They'd be just like, you know, hi, I'm from the Jehovah's Witness. And they can see what's inside, right? And they can say, oh, look, there's something here I can point out. They fake this stuff. That does happen. I'm telling you, this is how they do a lot of this stuff.
I'm fairly certain. I'm wanting to say that it might have been Darren Brown. But somebody like Darren Brown actually ran a test for like mediums or whatnot to come into a house. And what they did was they put out fake information about the house or where they were going. And then they invited them out and they repeated things that were off of the fake website about the house.
They did that with a castle too. Same thing. They did with a castle, fake painting, fake history, and the medium. Give forth the fake history.
Dateline.
Figure, right?
Yeah.
Dateline.
So after all these times, it's one big long scam, just like snake oil. That's all it is.
Absolutely. If you want to, guys, you can head over to the Discord. I'll pop in for a little chat. Last night was a really good discussion, I think, about hypnosis. So that started out as a 10-minute stay and ended up being 3 hours, but it was a good conversation. So if you want, guys, you can head over to the Discord. We'll pick it back up over there for a little bit and see what you guys thought. Tomorrow we will be with Nicholas Brand, who is a PhD student in paleontology. He will be discussing his belief that the dinosaurs actually had feathers, all of them. So that will be
except for theropods.
Yeah, well, what you would consider, what you played with as a child, had feathers, T Rexes, those sort of things, and I think that Trevor Valley's going to join us for that as well. He doesn't know about his scheduling, but if he can make it work, he's going to come in because he doesn't think that's the case. So it'll be good to see where that kind of ends up. So join us for that. That's at 8 o'clock. GE, you get the final word to sing, scream. This is your now 73rd appearance. So welcome 73, and we'll let you close it out tonight.
All right. Thanks everybody for dropping by. Don't forget to stand up and use your voice. I guess I got to do my normal thing. Like, hey heathens, how y'all doing?
There we go. Excellent. All right, guys. Y'all. We'll see you in the Discord. And if not, we'll see you tomorrow at 8 p.m. And in case I pass on to the afterlife before that, I'll call you for the show. I'll call in.
This number has been disconnected and or is no longer in service.
I would probably get into the
Non sequitur, your facts are uncorrelated.